Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it's your boy, Circles of the Java Tears Podcast, and we are back for another episode of Coffee Talk with Friends. I brought the homie on board, Brian, former writer for WWE, and currently he's at Complex. Brian, welcome to the show. How are you today?
I'm good. Thank you for having me. I don't drink coffee that often, so I actually made a cup for today. I'm helping the gimmick out.
So, how are you feeling today, man?
Not too bad. It's interesting. So, a little bit of, I guess, going into shoot territory. We were supposed to do this a week ago. And
yes.
I had too much of a good time on Saturday evening and was not able to do a 9 a.m. Podcast. And it's funny that I'm glad it worked out that way, because had we talked a week ago, it would have been, hey, I think All Out might be good. And now here we are a week later, and there's a lot more to talk about because of that.
Yes, there is. So let's jump right in. Okay. All Out was this past weekend, was a week ago, Sunday. It's considered one of the biggest pay-per-views of the year, or even the past 5 years. Some people have even said that.
Why would you go more than five?
Huh?
I would go more than five. I mean, I loved the show, but in terms of newsworthiness, definitely, I would say the most newsworthy North American show since, what, like WrestleMania 17? I can't really think of a show that was as newsworthy as this, mm-hmm. in terms of like actual impact on the industry. Now, obviously, WrestleMania 17, great show. Then you have the Austin heel turn at the end that really starts the company's pretty steep decline right after that.
Wait.
I'm saying for business. It was awful for business.
Let's rewind this, because okay. You came out shooting, and let's put the guns down real quick, because we got to talk about that one comment you said.
I'm not talking about quality, okay? I'm not putting opinions out there. I'm just saying, business-wise, turning Steve Austin heel was an awful idea. The Rock left. They didn't have a top babyface to take over. If you remember right afterwards, they're trying to make Undertaker, Kane, Benoit, Jericho. They didn't have a top babyface ready. It's what Austin wanted to do, and that's what they did it. But they didn't have a top babyface. Also, WCW leaving, and then a completely botched invasion angle, that whole thing. 2001 was not a great year for that company's popularity. Now, I love 2000. I think 2000 is the best year of WWE programming that they ever did. 2001, there's a lot of – they fumbled a lot of things in that year. They really – I think the lack of competition for them really – they kind of lost their way. That year. And then 2002, I think they have some good content. They get their storytelling back on track, especially on SmackDown. But I'm just strictly talking from a business standpoint.
I get you.
Was that?
I definitely understand what you're saying on that one. It was a weird time. It was a weird time. They didn't know which direction to go. They were trying to create competition within themselves. It was weird. It was weird.
Yeah.
And then we all know the industry has said, except for my boy Montana Black,
mm-hmm.
that Austin Hill turn was not good for business at all.
I mean, you can argue if he was entertaining, if it was good TV, if you liked him. But it was a real there's just a lot of questionable decisions in that time period. But bringing it back to, you know, All Out, I think that this show was similar in quality. I mean, WrestleMania 17 is a great show, and I thought All Out was a great show as well. But then the angles that happened at the end of that show, and we're already kind of seeing, the impact that it had on this week's, Dynamite, and, you know, some big shows coming forward too. But I think this was like a monumental history-making show. We'll see in a couple of years if it lasts, but it definitely was, you know, There was an impact because of this show.
Okay. So, question. CM Punk,
mm-hmm.
you know, big talker, big shot caller.
Mm-hmm.
He says that Daniel Bryan and Adam Cole coming over to mm-hmm. AEW is bigger than the outsiders coming to WCW. And you're a massive WCW fan.
Yeah.
So, do you agree? Or you disagree, and why?
So I guess I don't know if we're throwing out hot takes already, but I'll throw one out. Why not? I think what AEW has been able to do in its short period is maybe like the biggest thing that a company has ever done in the history. Because even if we want to compare it to WCW, and they're obviously not at the level that WCW ever was in terms of competition or just raw, you know, numbers. But then again, WWE is not currently where WCW was, you know, and there's a lot of other reasons and factors and, you know, business changes for that. But the big thing that I don't think people really give AEW enough credit for is they're a new brand. WCW had existed in some way for decades. This was, you know, it was the Pepsi to the Coke. This is a completely brand new, like, brand, and the fact that they've been able to get where they've gotten, brought the stars over they have in less than 3 years. It's, you know, actually technically less than two. They're still, they haven't even hit their second year anniversary yet on TV. It's really amazing. And the reason why I would maybe see what Punk is saying is that this happening is instant credibility. And we'll see if, I think in the long term, it could end up having a much larger effect than Nash and Hall coming over. Because Nash and Hall coming over didn't mean that, like, oh, the war changed suddenly the next week. And as big as Nash and Hall coming over, honestly, Hogan turning heel and the NWO was the bigger thing. You know, people didn't suddenly shift over because Nash and Hall were on TV. It was that whole overall angle. And who knows? Maybe we're in the infancy of that. Maybe this new, you know, revamped version of the Elite with Adam Cole in it, and you have these big names, you know, you have these big names in Brian and Brian Danielson and CM Punk. Odds are, you know, Ric Flair is going to be in there pretty soon. Bray Wyatt's a possibility. I think, you know, Ruby Soho is a big deal, but more so than that is that I think as we kind of go on, we're going to see more women coming over from WWE to AEW, which really is the area of that company that needs the most work. And I think as soon as female workers see AEW as a viable alternative, that's really going to shake things up too. So I would say that I think in the long term, Cole and Danielson coming over could mean more because it firmly establishes that place. And you're already seeing it this past week that top level talent that liked being at WWE, these aren't people that were bitter or upset or anything. Top level people at WWE that liked being there are choosing AEW over WWE. And I think that is a much bigger thing that ever happened with Nash and Hall. Nash and Hall, it was just, this place is willing to give us a lot of money. This is artists and creatives choosing this company over this company, which I think actually could have a much longer impact.
Why do you think people are choosing it over WWE so much? Even when they are happy, because you mentioned that these aren't bitter stars talking about, oh, I hated the company, they buried me. It's like, yo, I had a good time over there, but I want to go over here. Because supposedly they offered Daniel Bryan a massive deal. Mm-hmm. They also said in the deal, they allowed him to do the G1 in New Japan, but he still turned it down. Yeah. Why do you think, once again, people who are happy are still jumping ship?
Yeah, I mean, I honestly think that's the biggest indictment of WWE, where even if you are there and you are happy, or at least satisfied, a lot of these people, like, you know this, you know, having, you know, trained and actually been in the industry and taken bumps and everything, you make a lot of sacrifices to get to that level. And where WWE is as a company right now, Daniel Bryan even said it in his book, they're a parody of pro wrestling. They're not really pro wrestling. And they don't claim to be. They want to be something else. They want to be this other thing. And imagine if you make the sacrifices, hone your craft, do all of these things, everything you've got to do to get to that level in WWE. Are you really the type of person that then just wants to sit around and be told what you're going to do all the time and be handed scripts and be told that, you know, your craft and the way you do it is wrong and that you need to learn it the way that they do it? It doesn't seem like a great environment. You know, it's, you know, a similar reason why, yeah, you might have someone like, I don't know, like Chris Evans, he'll do Marvel. He'll play Captain America. He'll get all that money. But if it comes down to it, okay, well now I'm going to go do theater. Now I'm going to go do these smaller things. These are the things that I really prefer to do, as an artist. I think that's where a lot of these performers are. Even if they had a great time at WWE, even if it was professional and they treated them well and they thought they, you know, They enjoy their time there. It's not really what they want to do. They're not going to let Daniel Bryan do the matches that he wants to do. They're not going to present Adam Cole as the star that he is. They're going to have their own kind of bias. And it just, it seems like a much more rewarding creative environment over there.
So let me ask you this question. Mm-hmm. We all know with the problem with WWE is that they're overly produced. A lot of the stuff is like, you know, like you mentioned, being handed a script, being, you know, told what, you know, basically you're like, hey, you're playing this character, go play this character right now. And AEW has a ton of freedom. But do you think all that freedom that they're getting, do you think it will hurt them in the long run?
Time will tell. We really don't know. I think a thing that is so interesting about AEW is there's really never been a company quite like it. Even if you compare it to WCW, and if people want to, you know, point to WCW, like, look, they brought in all this big outside talent and, you know, people had too much say or blah, blah, blah. And if you want to make these comparisons, the mindset of the people they're bringing in is completely different than the mindset of the people that were in WCW. You don't have like a Luger or a Hogan or any of these like, or Nash or Hall. They're just coming in for big money. Don't really want to work and just want to stay on top all the time. The current crop of wrestlers in this industry don't think that way. Like, they understand the need to make new stars and to hand it forward because they came up in an industry that was a monopoly. They understand that there needs to be competition. They want to help that next generation. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing that kind of makes them different. Secondly, unlike WCW, you know who the boss is at AEW. It's Tony Khan. He's writing the checks. He's making the calls. And he has he's much more open-minded than Vince. He's a bigger fan of wrestling than Vince. I think he respects the creativity of the wrestlers a lot more than Vince does. But at the end of the day, there's no question about who's in charge. Turner's not going to come in and replace him. He doesn't have like a larger corporate structure that he has to report to. At the end of the day, he is in charge. And that was never the case in WCW. Bischoff had like leeway when they were on top, but eventually he gets replaced. Then we see all the stuff with Russo and the booking committees and all of this stuff. They were under the umbrella of a much larger corporation that ultimately ends with that company, Turner, selling the company for a ridiculously small amount of money and effectively making the industry a monopoly for 20 years. That's not going to happen with AEW. Tony loves this thing. You can tell that Tony loves doing this thing. If I had to guess, I think his current strategy is they're going to put a lot of money into this thing over the first 3 years to really beef this thing up. And then when that next TV negotiation comes in, he's going to make all that back because they're going to get a huge contract. Is it going to be as big as WWE? No. But if they're delivering similar ratings to WWE at a fraction of the cost, it's very easy for them to go in and say that they should be making at least half of what WWE is making. And so even if, let's say Tony sinks $200 million into this thing over the first 3 years, if on the back end, he gets a TV deal that's worth $200 million a year, there you go. He tripled his money, you know?
Yeah, like, quadruple, whatever is
exactly. The money. And we know he's got the money. We know him and his family have the money. And the thing that makes this different than, say, TNA is TNA had a lot of money. They had a big company behind them. Unfortunately, they had no idea what they were doing. And so eventually Panda Energy was just like, we can't keep putting money into this for our daughter to have a job. Whereas if they had actually kind of handled things properly, I think if TNA was having a return of investment of like $100 million a year, yeah, they would have pumped more money into that thing. It's just they didn't know what they were doing. They didn't understand the wrestling side of things. And AEW, as far as we've seen so far, does not have that problem.
That is true. So you used to work for WWE Creative. So I'm going to need you to take the pen out real quick. Mm-hmm. Raw has been absolutely horrible.
I had noticed.
I'm a huge WWE guy, and before, there was a while I used to go to bed at 10.
Yeah.
But I would stay up to watch Raw.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, I go to bed at 9:30. I watch the clips online, see what's up. If anything that stood out, yeah. I'll go through Twitter, and then if it's something that stood out, I'll watch it online. I'll rewatch online for the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
All right, big dogs. I called you in. I need you to fix Raw. How are you going to fix Raw?
Well, first off, I do want to speculate. I worked at WWE over 10 years ago. And I was only there for like a couple of months. Just because I like to throw that out there so that people don't think I'm like running around as like, you know,
Yeah, no, not gotcha.
Got like something I'm not. Or that like I'm bitter because I don't work there anymore. I have been a fan since leaving. You know, my thoughts and feelings about them. I've always kind of had issues with their presentation because I didn't grow up with them. I grew up with WCW. I always kind of prefer that more realistic style. But yeah. I have been fans. I have been a fan over the years, and I'm starting to get back into SmackDown again. They lost me for a while there, but yeah, Raw has a major problem. A huge problem with that show is that it's 3 hours long. Really, so many of the problems that are a problem with Raw are just a problem with the structure of WWE overall. Yeah. I think since SmackDown is clearly the higher priority, and they've probably done a few things over the past year that have upset Fox, they want to make them happy. I don't think Fox loves giving free promotion to Peacock, for example. I think they put a lot of their big acts over on that show. And I think that hurts a star power, star power wise over on Raw. I think they're hurt. But I think the reason why Raw's also hurt is because they don't make new stars. They don't get behind people. Things don't feel like they have consequence. There's people that should have come up from NXT and been big deals on that show. Also, another thing, that team is completely overworked. I was saying this years ago, that they needed to essentially make NXT a developmental territory again and give the NXT crew control over Raw. I'm not saying you call it NXT Raw. What I am saying is you put Triple H in charge of that show and you bring up, those top-level NXT stars that are ready to be on television. Because even back then, they were hurting for star power. Even now, I don't think they have enough main roster people to fill both shows. Now, if you go back 3 or 4 years ago between the main roster and NXT, you did. And if you kind of brought them up, merged them together, I think you would have had something. And I think if both shows had a distinct, character, had a distinct vibe, if they just were different in some way, I think that would help Raw a lot. But at the end of the day, I think the biggest issue with Raw is that Raw is a 3-hour show that feels like a 1-hour show that's stretched out for 3 hours. Matches go on for too long. Talking segments go on for too long. They do rematches constantly. That show is just completely lost. We're seeing this tomorrow night. Last week, I actually watched Raw last week because I was curious what their response would be if they had one. Their response was of a 3-hour show to spend 90 minutes on a single tag match. New Day looked good, but I didn't care about any of that. And at the end of the day, surprise, surprise, the team that won were the only team that actually cut a promo at the beginning of the show with the champions. So, like, you spent 3 hours to get a result you could have figured out in the first 5 minutes. Okay. But more or less, I gave them some credit. Cool, you're building up to something next week. They very rarely announce things in advance. And when they do, they usually don't deliver, which is what's happening tomorrow night. They've now announced it's going to be Randy Orton versus Bobby Lashley for the WWE title, which was supposed to be the main event of the pay-per-view. So they're hot-shotting. They don't know what they're doing. They're panicking. They spent an entire week last week setting up this week's show, and now they're not going to deliver that tag team title match. They spent 3 hours, building up. So that's the problem. Really the big problem is it's Vince. This is all Vince. Vince panics. He rips the show up. He loses interest. And for a show that already is a challenge because it's 3 hours long, it just feels like they copy and paste the week before, and that's it. It's a broken process. It's a broken process on that show. And I know that's a lot of behind the scenes stuff, and we can now talk about like on camera stuff, but that's for me. A lot of times when I look at WWE's, issues, a lot of it is production based. A lot of it is not having a great structure in place. They've been doing 3-hour shows for almost a decade and still haven't figured out how to do it. If you watched Raw and the sound cut out from time to time, or like the screen just went black, you wouldn't be like, it's a 3-hour show, give them credit. No, you'd say like, you need to at least get the image on TV. And they've been doing the show for a decade. They should know how to write it. And they just still haven't figured out how to execute that show.
You spoke about how there's not enough star power right now, which mm-hmm. I can definitely see that. Who do you think, who would you push? Give me four or five people you would push like, yo, they got it. They should be on a bigger scale right now.
So right off the bat, when it comes to that, I think that I've kind of always said, so off the bat, there should not be an AEW. There should be no AEW. Like, if WWE was doing what they were doing, if WWE was competent, there would be no need for AEW. Like, if suddenly tomorrow there was a new, like, football league or a new baseball league, they wouldn't be challenging, you know, the MLB or the NFL for ratings within 2 years. That would not happen. So with that in mind, I've always been of the opinion that WWE could start a new boom period tomorrow if they got their shit together. That's the thing. They have the talent. They have more money than they've ever had. They've had better distribution than they've ever had. And they've had, well, maybe not now, but a year ago, they had the best roster that they'd ever had. They unfortunately let go of a lot of people. Now, on the Raw side, I think a big thing that they need to do is they need to make some new people. And they need to make some new people that are under the age of 35. Like, they're getting behind, like, Damian Priest. The dude's 38. They're doing a lot of stuff with Sheamus. He's 42. Bobby Lashley is 45. Now, I'm fine with building up older stars part-time to make someone younger. So, for example, with me, I'd probably have, like, the U.S. title on John Morrison. John Morrison is such an incredible talent, such an amazing worker. I think giving that guy a 3 to 4 month title reign that, like, kind of means something could get him ready to really put over someone young, up and coming, and really make them something. Now, of the people of who to do it with, that's where it gets really tough because, like you're saying, like, if you'd asked me this question a year ago, I could have given you five names. Unfortunately, they've really cut their legs out by getting rid of so many of their promising next generation of guys. I think it's really difficult. The most I can look at is I can look at some older veteran guys that I would say, put more steam behind that person, build them up so they can eventually make somebody else. Now, the obvious one is Big E. Big E's obviously one people are very high on, and they should be. So I would definitely try to do something with him. The problem is that you almost have to make him on SmackDown because if you bring him over to Raw, he becomes an afterthought because of just where that show's at, because of what people – like their perception of that show right now.
Yeah.
But Big E would definitely be someone that would be high on the list for me. John Morrison is someone who I would just work to establish a little bit better. I really like Randy and Riddle as a team together. I actually would use them to elevate those titles to a real main event position. And I would try to find other main event tag teams they could work with. Personally, I would have turned Drew McIntyre a while ago, have him and Sheamus as like a real, like tough, like, top level tag team. I would try to get AJ back into a singles position. You know, I think almost is like, he's an interesting act. I don't know if he's necessarily over as a talent though. I think he's been protected. I think he can do spots, but if you suddenly put him out there for a meaningful match, I think it would kind of fall apart. Unfortunately,
almost. Why do you say that?
I mean, the times that we've seen him do spots, they've been kind of sloppy. I mean, I know the crowd like popped for that stuff with Lashley because the thought of it's interesting. But then as soon as he had hit like that tree slam, like he was a little sloppy. Like when he's in tag matches, they only have him do so much. I think that putting him in a tag team was maybe a little too much too soon. I think him transitioning back into a managerial role for AJ for a while might be the way to go because I think he's better as that threat. As that person on the outside who can do like come in and maybe do like one or two really big moves. When they're in a match, though, there's an expectation. And I think that's where he kind of struggles. And I get wanting to put him in a tag match because that's how he's going to get better. But yeah, I don't know. And almost is like one of these guys, like, and it's the whole Giant thing. I just don't know what the long term use of Giants on weekly TV is. I don't think we've ever really seen a weekly television Giant booked well. They need to be a spectacle. They need to be like, they're only out every once in a while. When they're there every single week, I think all they do is they become overexposed and they make other people look weaker.
Yeah.
I think almost needs to be like, he needs to either be in the corner or he needs to be someone you bring out every once in a while. So yeah, maybe it's building him up as something special. I don't know.
I think they are building him up because I think they just don't have big dudes anymore. Mm-hmm. When it comes to him, I think that's the whole thing with him is that they don't have like 7+ something dudes. I'll put that in quotations. I don't really know how tall he is. You know,
apparently he's over 7. Apparently he is like
okay,
yeah.
And you know, they don't have too many of those, so they're trying to like protect him and have, like, I guess AJ nurture him and
give him
the ropes, show him the ropes. So there's potential there. I do like what you're saying of that John Morrison, because I think he's definitely underused.
Yeah.
And I love The Miz. I love John Morrison. I love their wacky, cool stuff. But it comes to a point where you're kind of hurting the dude.
Yeah. Yeah. I think a tough thing that Raw kind of has is that there's not a lot on that show you care about. And The issue is that if you have things you don't care about, it's tough to make new things. This is an example I use all the time. You know, look at AEW and look at how much Jericho ultimately meant for that company. The credibility he gave them in the beginning, and the fact that just having him on that show and what he did for the Inner Circle, what he did for those guys, bringing them up, and how valuable he was. If you remember, the last time he was on WWE TV, he was in a backstage comedy segment with Elias. WWE just does not use their legends effectively. Look at how they just used Jeff Hardy this week. He was in the 24/7 thing.
You think that was a bad thing?
I do, because a couple weeks ago when he beat Karrion Kross in 90 seconds, people were yelling at me on Twitter saying that he's a legend and that it's not a big deal that he beat Karrion Kross because he's a respected legend. And then now it's like, well, is it so bad he's in the 24/7? Like, I'm not saying that Jeff Hardy should be like the world champion. I'm not saying that. But what I would say is that he can be used a lot more effectively. You know, he could be at a much – that kind of mid-pack. Like, it's okay if he's, like, at that level where, like, he can have a two-month feud with a guy and in the end beat – like, he can get beat and put the guy over. Maybe you put him in a tag team with, like, someone younger that you want to, like, elevate up. You know, you look at – I think one of the – at AEW, they've used Sting so incredibly. Like, he has elevated – I would say, I think that he has elevated Darby, and I think the times they've used him in the ring, it's really meant something, but they're not overexposing him. I think he's done a lot to elevate that Darby act and bring the spotlight to Darby, but then Darby's the one who really benefits from it. And Jeff Hardy could maybe be the same thing for somebody else. The problem is they just don't have guys like that, like that's popping to my mind. But jumping back, I will say I just thought of someone else. Ricochet is one of the craziest, like, why aren't they not doing anything with this guy?
Well, he can't talk on the mic. I think that's the issue with Ricochet.
Okay, well, you know, accentuate the positive side, the negatives. Like, there's any guy you can find negatives to it, and that's the problem with WWE is that it is, you know, it is largely run by older people who just don't get the industry anymore. A lot of people protecting their spots. And it's just become a conveyor belt. It's just become, you know, it isn't, hey, we've got this talent. How do we make money off of him? It's, well, this is what we do here. And if you don't do these things, well, then
you can't work for you.
The problem is that I think years have proven that thing they want doesn't work anymore. That thing they want isn't effective. It isn't good weekly TV. It isn't what the audience wants. So, yeah, Ricochet can't talk. Okay, don't have him talk. You know, who's one of the most exciting up-and-coming acts over in AEW? It's Dante Martin. Dante Martin can't talk, but Dante Martin goes out there, and he has these really fun, exciting matches, and you care about him because you get to see all the cool stuff that he does. And Ricochet is obviously a better worker than Dante Martin. You know, think about, like, the most perfect, like, Ricochet, you know, I'm not saying that he needs to main event a pay-per-view, but you could do Ricochet Bobby on TV and they could go 15 minutes and Ricochet could look incredible during that match and the crowd could get really behind him and Bobby could ultimately win, but he doesn't have to talk. Like there's so many things you could do with Ricochet that don't involve him actually speaking. But yeah, that's, you know, Keith Lee, that's another one where like they just so obviously don't get it. You know, they missed the boat on him completely. So yeah, that's just, you know, that just me going on there.
So let's go into the coffee pack real quick before we get out of here. You said some amazing stuff. So we talked about a lot of things, but what currently are you enjoying in wrestling right now?
I've just really fallen for AEW, as you can kind of tell from what I've been saying. And here's the thing about AEW, like they won me over. Like, I wasn't necessarily, like, on board in the beginning. I didn't really watch for most of the first half of 2020 and the end of 2019. Like, I saw the first show. I thought it was pretty good. I was really loving a lot of it. You know, like, I thought Moxie was doing great stuff. I thought Cody was doing great stuff. But they just didn't necessarily have – they didn't build up their roster yet to a point where I was like, I got to watch this whole show every week live. Whereas that's where I am now. That's where I'm at with them now. You know, I'm going to the Newark show this week. I'm going to Arthur Ashe the next week. Like, yeah, I'm just fully in on them overall as a product. That's not to say they're perfect. I mean, there's never been a perfect wrestling company.
What won you over exactly?
I think the big thing that won me over was it was just the overall quality of the shows improved. So it wasn't just, wow, look at these promos. Look how amazing this is. It wasn't just like I have to, like, it, when it got to the point where it's like the clips aren't enough. I need to be there for the whole for the whole show. And I really think that once I think once the Elite really started to come together, I think that got me. You know, once you had reliably these Kenny Young Bucks matches on TV, once you had really strong baby faces like Moxley being built up, that really got me. And I really think a turning point for me, and it's interesting because Punk and Danielson also kind of cited this, that Brody Lee show, like, was so fantastic and really revealed a lot about the character of that company and the people running that company that – it's weird. It's like they won me over. They got my trust. And that's difficult in wrestling. Like, you always have this feeling of like, I don't want these people to trick me. I don't want them to pull one over on me. Like, I need to have my guard up because I'm going to get disappointed. I'm going to get hurt eventually. That's what always happens. And here we are going on over, you know, over a year from that. And it's like, that haven't hurt me yet. You know, it's like, it's been enjoyable. And I found that, like, the fandom that I've put into the product has been, you know, like, respected and reciprocated. It's, you know, similar to Marvel, you know, they don't hit it out of the park every time, but overall, I invest my time and I enjoy what they give me.
All right.
Yeah.
We did good. We did good stuff. Now we're getting negative. What is something that, what in wrestling right now, you currently like, yo, I do not like this.
Yeah. Okay. Minor thing. This is very, very minor. Corbin. Okay. Why is he called Happy Corbin? He needs to be called Cash Corbin. It's right there. It's so incredibly obvious. It's a much better name. He should be Cash Corbin. That's it. That's a very small minor thing. A bigger thing that gets me about WWE programming, and this is just very black and white. I was actually hanging out with a friend the other day, and we watched SmackDown and Rampage back to back. And a big thing that struck us was WWE just skips too many steps. They skip steps, they rush programs, and then they have nothing to put on TV. And I think, honestly, this Corbin thing is a big example. They spent their time and they had a couple weeks where they, like, really established this guy is poor and his life's getting worse. And then they go to Vegas and he wins all of his money back through vignettes on social media. None of this happened on TV. There was no storytelling. And then, okay, well, now what are we doing with him? He's just rich now. We're just going to do that every week. They don't tell the story. And the thing is, if you just slow down and you tell the story, which AEW does really well, they will show you every step of the way. They will, like, take you through the full process. Because they do that, they have, like, consistently entertaining shows every week. Whereas with WWE, they rush stuff and then they got nothing to do. It's like, oh, rush to this. I mean, can you name me, like, in WWE, like, there's maybe what, like, three tag teams that get along? Every tag team's feuding with each other. Every tag team has a problem with each other. And that's just not interesting. Like, you can't have everyone doing this all the time. Look at the Eva Doudrop story, for example. I'm not saying that was, like, blow away, but they broke up within, like, what, 6 weeks?
Yeah.
They should have won the tag titles together. They should have been an act for, like, 3 months. You can tell a lot of stories in there. And then eventually Doudrop gets, like, fed up and the turn happens. They rushed right through it. Now what are they going to do? They got nothing. They got nothing because they just rushed to the end and then they're like, well, no one cares. And it's like, yeah, because you didn't make them care. Like, that's your job as a company is to tell them the stories. So yeah, that's.
I think the only storyline that's been, like, long has been the Roman Reigns bloodline storyline.
Well, and the reason why that's long is because the ultimate payoff is Dwayne Johnson and they don't have him at TV every week. They've got to wait until Mania on that one. And I'll say this, with Roman, it's tough because it's kind of like, you know, glass half full, glass half empty. I think he's doing phenomenal work. He really has finally, and what's so funny is that he's finally telling the character, he's playing the character everyone said he should have played 5 years ago. when he was coming out trying to be John Cena with the suffer and succotash and the winking at the camera. Everyone's like, no, just make him like a silent badass killer. But they kept trying to make him John Cena. If they pushed him like this 5 years ago, I don't think we would have had the popularity dip that we had. I don't think we would have had people booing him out of the building at the Rumble. I don't think we would have had the crowd turning against him because this is what he was meant to do. He's great at this. I will say, however, on the other hand, I think for a company that desperately needs to make stars, they shouldn't have on both shows heel champions that are just bulldozing everybody. That's not what I think the company needs right now. And with Roman, you can make the argument because he's so good at it. I think Bobby's really great too. But one of these two shows needs to have a babyface that we feel good about winning matches.
I don't think babyfaces are over anymore.
Not in WWE. That's the thing that gets me. When people want to say crowds hijack the shows, or they just love to boo the babyfaces. This is only a problem in one company. This doesn't happen anywhere else.
But AEW's champions are heels. Well, not the current tag team champions. The Lucha Bros are faces, but Kenny's a heel.
They're baby faces. People cheer their baby faces. The problem with WWE is they don't know how to effectively book a baby face anymore. They're just not good at it. It isn't the crowd like, oh, I just want to boo every single baby face. No, give them a cool baby face that they can get behind. People want
I think the only baby face right now that's currently like, that's hot is Bianca. Mm-hmm. I think she's the one. I don't know what she did. Because I was at Madison at MSG for the Super Show. Mm-hmm. And this is what happened. I watched SmackDown like about a week ago, week and a half, like the SmackDown after SummerSlam, mm-hmm. obviously. And I watched it. It was great. And I remember when Becky came out initially, people were cheering for her. And they were kind of low-key booing Bianca. Mm-hmm. And Bianca came out. She turned the whole arena around. And they were cheering for her.
Yeah.
Then this past week, I saw not full heel heat for Becky, but it was heel heat. Because I was in the arena for that. And people were cheering for Bianca. And I think Bianca has captured that. About 99% you're right about everybody else. Except for John Morrison. People fuck with John Morrison. People like John Morrison. But I think John is supposedly a heel, though.
I think a big problem that happens with WWE programming is that – well, so for starters, to answer the Bianca thing, with a babyface, I think they need to be one of two things. They need to be a cool person that people want to be, or they need to be a relatable person that people can see themselves in. Yeah. That is why, you know, as much as I love Dave Bautista, Daniel Bryan will always be a better babyface than Dave Bautista. Not necessarily cool and not someone you can relate to. He's not someone you want to live vicariously through. The Rock, Stone Cold, yes, those are people you can live vicariously through. I turn on Raw, he's an entertaining guy, but Matt Riddle, do I think he's cool? No. Can I relate to him? No. Bianca Belair, there's a little bit of both. There is a relatable quality, but she is also like larger than life and cool and someone that like you want to root for. That's why I think a lot of WWE, why they struggle with baby faces, is I think a lot of the people they try to push as baby faces don't fall in that category. Drew McIntyre, great worker, great performer. Don't think he's cool. Don't think he's relatable. Some kids might like him. They can sell swords, but I don't think your average viewer looks at him and goes like, yeah, that's someone I want to cheer for. And I think that's a big thing that kind of hurts WWE programming is they don't necessarily have that.
I think AEW, you can argue they're more relatable when it comes to their faces. Well, from what I've seen, like the reason why Darby's over, he captures a crowd of like people who share his emotion.
Yeah,
per se.
He's relatable. And he's cool. He's a small underdog, but he's also really fucking cool. You know, like he does both.
Yeah. So last segment, last question. Mm-hmm. What is your hot coffee take of the day?
Oh, boy. You mentioned this ahead of time, and I really should have thought about it. It's so crazy because, like, I throw hot takes out on Twitter, and then I, like, kind of walk away. I don't know, because part of it is, like, I want to say something dumb, like, you know, Buff Bagwell didn't get a fair shake. but you know, that's just my, like, dumb childhood, like, you know, someone who I thought was cool as a kid. I'll say this, and I'll give a shout out. My hot take is that I think Sophie Hathaway, Malcolm Bivens is in the top five most talented people in WWE. And I'll say at this point, I think on the mic, I think he could be better, or at least rivaling Paul Heyman. I think, you know, if I have to put it into hot take territory, but, you know, he's a guy that I think could be actually a legitimate difference maker in that company. Not just he can like be a good talker, but I think he could actually be a Bobby Heenan in a way that Heyman hasn't. You know, Heyman's been great with Brock. He was pretty good with CM Punk. That was a different character. But with Roman, maybe this is the hot take. I think I think the act's kind of stale with Roman. He's kind of doing the same thing he did with Brock. I'm fine with Roman having a manager. I wish it was someone new. I wish it was someone different. And with Heyman, the fact that he never really effectively got other people over, I think is kind of an issue. Whereas I look at, you know, at Malcolm, and he's a guy, and I think we'll see it with Diamond Mine down in NXT, who I think you could give a stable of people, and he could really give, you know, the rub to a lot of people. He's similar to Heyman. You know, Hogan was able to feud Heenan, you know, Hogan could feud with Heenan, and you could just bring in a lot of guys, you know, and regardless of what their shortcomings were, because you kept that heat there. And I could see a situation where you have Big E and Malcolm Bivens, like that's the real big feud. And Malcolm brings in all these guys and they all try to beat Big E and none of them really can. And you can get like a year of storylines out of that relationship. Yeah, I just can't say enough things about him.
So, question: you said something hot. You gotta dissect this real quick before we get out of here.
Yeah,
you said, you know, I'm gonna say it again.
I guess my hot take.
Correct me if I'm wrong.
It's not great.
If Heyman can get other guys over,
yes,
besides Brock and Roman, you got to talk to me more about that. Why do you say that?
So here's the thing with Heyman. I don't know if his heart is necessarily in. So I'm pretty sure this is public knowledge. I don't think I'm breaking any news here. But when Heyman first came back with Brock, it was as a performer. He was on a per date appearance contract. So when Brock wasn't on TV, Heyman wasn't getting paid. So at that time, Heyman was very willing to be attached to other people: Ryback, Cesaro, Curtis Axel. He wanted to be on TV. Well, once Brock's contract came back up, he negotiated a full-time deal for Heyman, and suddenly Heyman's not as interested in being on TV anymore. That's why it never felt like his heart was fully into Cesaro and Ryback and those guys, because he was just there to get paid and get on TV. Now, I think part of it is also the problem with Brock, where Brock, I think his time in the company, especially his part-time championship runs, I think were detrimental to the company. I think they were bad. Maybe this is a hot take I'm also stumbling on. I think his run as champion was maybe more detrimental than Hogan's run in WCW as champion. Listen, popularity went down with Brock as champion. Popularity went down. He spent years just plowing through any promising up-and-comer at a time when they desperately needed to build people. He would show up every couple of months and beat down the hot new stars. Imagine if during the Attitude Era, Bas Rutten was champion and he showed up every 6 months to beat The Rock. The Rock would have never become a big deal. And the same thing was happening over on WWE. Look at where we're at now. Which would be more beneficial to WWE? Having a part-time Brock Lesnar who shows up every, you know, 6 to 7 months, or a full-time Dean Ambrose who had beaten Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania. There are so many examples of people that Brock came in and just destroyed, made look like nothing, and then left. So I think ultimately his run as champion was detrimental to the company.
Wow.
So yeah, that I would say that. And the thing was that no one else really got like a rub off of him. If it had been a thing where it's like, maybe you associated a tag team with him as well. Maybe, you know, Heyman has this stable guy, but they didn't do that. It was Brock shows up every once in a while. He embarrasses whoever the top star that needs to be there every week is, and then goes away. You know,
so you just call Paul Heyman overrated, low key, but it's okay.
I think he's a very talented performer. I just don't think he's as effective as people want to act like he is. I think he's talented, but and maybe it's a combination of his booking, how he's used. But I just don't think he cuts a good promo, but I don't think the long term business has necessarily been there.
I get you, man. This was. You finished off hot, bro. You came in the fourth quarter with 30. Drop 30. Man, Brian, thank you so much for coming on another episode of Coffee Talk with Friends. Thank you so much for all these hot takes. And ladies and gentlemen, Brian, where can they find you? Twitter, Instagram, all that good stuff.
Yeah, I don't really do that stuff anymore. I have a Twitter, but it's private. The thing is I don't post my personal life online, and with Twitter, it's where I just go if I want to complain about wrestling so my friends don't have to hear about it. Yeah. I guess if that's what you want to see, follow me there. It was so funny. It was I remember this one time someone responded and they're like, "Don't you do anything besides complain about wrestling?" I was like, "Yeah, I don't put it online." That's not what it's people can interact with it as they want. But yeah,
I get it.
Yeah, at Brian Max Man, I'm on Twitter. Follow me there. Occasionally I'll promote things that I've done. Also, go to First We Feast's Instagram channel and watch Bars. It's a show that me and one of my best friends, Wilma Reyes, did together, where every episode he shows you how to make a different cocktail inspired by a rap track. So for example, we made a drink called the Malibuya. That is, mixing Goose and Malibu out of the song Monster. So, that's a show that we've done together. Check that out on the First We Feast Instagram and also their Facebook and everything. So Bars, go check that show out.
No problem. Ladies and gentlemen, this was another episode of Coffee Talk with Friends. Thank you.